Morning again. This is Bob Brundage. We're still in Los Angeles at the Caller Lab Convention of 1997. And this is the last day of the convention. Last night we had the pleasure of having a new nominee for the Milestone Award, which is Caller Lab's highest honor. And the recipient of that award is with us this morning, Dr. Ralph Piper. And so we'd like to have Ralph tell us a little bit about what life was like before he got so active in square dancing and other forms of dance. So tell us, where were you born and brought up, Ralph?
I was born in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Right.
So I'm a goddamn Yankee.
Okay. And let's see, you started square dancing, I think, just in 1917?
Right. In the town halls and the Grange halls around the Manchester, and then up around Lake Sunapee in the summertime at George's Mills, Sunapee, Newbury, New London, Bradford, New Hampshire.
Right. Okay. Well, that was an interesting time of your life, I'm sure. Then you went to Springfield College in Massachusetts.
Right. That's a long story. I went to high school in Manchester, but I couldn't see any use in going to school. So at almost the end of my freshman year, I dropped out of high school and went to work in the Amaskig cotton and woolen mills along the Merrimack River there for $15 a week.
Right.
After about a year and a half, I decided that I wanted to go to college. So to go to college, you had to go to high school. So I went back and started over, graduating from high school in 1924.
Okay.
Then I went to Springfield from 24 to 28. I had done, I loved dancing, and even as a kid, like a lot of us at those dances in the Grange halls, in the town halls, we would dance mostly the round dances or the what we call ballroom dances, I guess now.
Right.
Or the one step, the two step, the shadish, shatish, shadish, and polka. And we would get roped in to fill out a square at times, and also to make another couple in a contra line.
Right. Well, excuse me. So your field actually was physical education, if I remember. Springfield College in Massachusetts at that time, and I guess to this day, to some extent, is a large physical education institution.
It's not large, very small.
No, it's a small school.
But it's well known all over the world for its graduates.
Right, right. So following that, then you got into Kansas State.
Well, in between, after graduating, from college, then my first position was coach of swimming and tennis at Kansas State College, and athletic trainer and instructor of physical education. I did about everything except sweep out the gym.
Right. Okay. So, following Kansas State, then you went to the University of Minnesota?
Right. at Kansas State, I had got $2,000 for the school year. They were going to give me a raise of $200 for the next year. But I had met Fred Luring, the director of athletics at the University of Minnesota. And for some reason or other, he wanted me to come to Minnesota and offered me $2,500.
There you go.
So I quit Kansas State and went to Minnesota.
Okay. So,
As head gymnastics coach.
All right.
And instructor of physical education.
Very good. Very good. So then I understand that you got into square dance calling around 1938.
Well, I guess after finishing high school in 1924, I did no more square dancing until 1938 when I was in New York studying for my doctorate at New York University. And I happened to join up with the first organized square dance club in the United States, supposedly. It was the American Square Dance Club with Margo Mayo from Kentucky as the leader, and Ralph Tefferteller, who was the director of the Henry Street Settlement House. And he was from Tennessee, and he was the caller. We used to dance on Sunday afternoons with Teffy calling, and after the dancing, we sat around and sang under the direction or leadership of Burl Ives.
All right. Very nice. Well, I knew Ralph Tefferteller, not very well, but I knew him in New York City when I was...
Oh, really?
Yes, right.
Well...
Did you by any chance ever know Lawrence Loy at the University of Massachusetts?
Yeah.
Well, I worked with him. I was at the University of Massachusetts for a couple of years, and I worked closely with him in square dancing.
Fine.
And he was just... I don't know if people realize, but he was one of the first callers to put square dance things on a major label. That was RCA Victor, and the great big 12-inch 33 and a third RPM records. Right. So,
it was then that I really got interested in square dancing again. And I said, it's such a wonderful recreational activity. So I put it into my dance classes that I was teaching at the University of Minnesota, using calls, singing calls, that I picked up from the little book called Good Morning by Henry Ford.
Right.
But it was actually written by Benjamin Lovett.
Right. Yeah.
The calls were simple.
Yeah.
The dances were simple. Were easy.
Right.
But they were fun. In fact, in those days when we first started, square dancing was fun. And anybody who stuck his head in a door where a group was dancing, they were invited in. Come on in. You can dance. Dance with us. If you can walk, you can square dance.
Right.
But now, it's so different. Now, if you take on my course for 8 weeks, you graduate, you might be able to join a square dance club.
Right. Ralph, while you were at NYU, did you happen to run into Michael and Marianne Herman?
Oh, yeah. Michael Marianne were very good friends of mine.
Right.
He had a shop there.
Yeah.
Where he sold equipment and dresses and paraphernalia.
Well, they had a dance hall on 14th Street.
Yeah.
And I've called there several times.
Mm. Right.
There was a professor at NYU, I think it was at NYU, Dick Krauss.
Yeah, well, Dick was at Columbia.
Oh, Columbia, you're right.
My recollection of Dick was at the convention in Detroit when I arranged an evening of square and round dances inviting callers or teachers from all over the country, physical education teachers, to call or present a round dance at this convention. Well, Dick, I corresponded with Dick, and he said he'd like to teach some little waltz routine.
Right.
That had just come out.
Okay.
These new dances were coming out every week or so.
Right.
So he said, I need a partner. I don't have anyone with me that'll be with me. And so I got Mary Elizabeth McCoy from Lindenwood College to dance with him while he demonstrated this little waltz. Well, afterwards, Mary came to me with tears in her eyes, and she said, I couldn't help it. He led me into this two-step pattern of the waltz instead of the waltz, the common step-step close.
Right.
He did a two-step pattern, step-close, step, and it was a shame because there were several hundred members of the National Dance Association there, teachers, who knew how to waltz.
Right.
But Dick wrote a book. He asked me to send him one of my favorite square dances, which I did. As I remember, it was called The Route.
Oh, yes, okay. Right.
That was, he published it in this book.
Right. Also in that territory, and I think from the folk dance field, was Olga Kubitsky. Does that name ring a bell?
Oh, Olga is a very good friend of mine. In fact, she called me not long ago.
Is that right?
From New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, she
Olga had a background of ballet.
Right.
Teaching at Hunter College.
Hunter College.
And also, I believe she taught some ballroom. She was the best lady partner that I ever remember for following. I would start to tell her what we were going to do. She would say, don't tell me. Just lead me, and I will follow.
Right.
She was a wonderful dancer.
Well, she was a little taller than you, wasn't she?
Right.
Yes, right. Well, she got involved in the square dance field, but not too long. Yes, a little bit, way back.
Is she still living?
As far as I know,
out in Long Island.
I've lost contact with her for many years ago, as a matter of fact. So, was it at that time that you made your association with Charlie Thomas?
I forget now. Charlie and I got to know each other or got interested, but Charlie and Jimmy Klassen and I happened to begin the American Squares magazine sometime in the 40s.
Okay.
And then in 1949, we started the first American Square Dance Camp at the Medford YMCA camp in Medford, New Jersey.
Yeah.
Then we moved it to Camp Ida Hoppe in Loretto, Minnesota. Charlie came only for about 2 years, but Jimmy kept coming, and I directed the camp for several years. Mm. We had students and leaders and from all over the country, and we would bring in some expert for teaching folk or ballroom or square or contours, men like Don and Marie Armstrong. I hired them on the staff, and Ricky Holden and people like that, different summers.
Right.
We ran the camp until about 1956 or 57. In 56, I wasn't there, nor was I at the National Square Dance Convention in this summer in Minneapolis, because I was teaching on a Fulbright Award in Burma, the University of Rangoon.
Right.
I'm probably the only living or dead person that turned down a chance to coach an Olympic team or a United States team in the Olympics.
Right.
But the same year, I was chairman of the National Rules Committee of Gymnastics, and I had a Fulbright Award to teach at the University of Rangoon.
Right.
And the State Department made a deal with me that if I would accept that award and teach, they would give my wife an award to teach at the Women's College in Burma. And that meant a whole school year of teaching and the chance to visit a lot of other countries going and coming back.
Right.
So I resigned from the Rules Committee and withdrew my nomination as coach, Olympic coach.
Okay.
I was on the Olympic Committee for about 14 years.
Right. Well, this is a far cry from a Fulbright student to a high school dropout.
That's right.
Well, do you happen to know how Charlie Thomas and Jimmy Klassen got together? Cause
no, I can't remember that.
Wasn't Klassen from Texas?
Yes, yeah. Jimmy was from around El Paso.
Right.
So he and Herb Gregerson.
Yeah. It was an odd combination for a Texan and a New Jerseyan and a Minnesotan to get together. But
right.
I think you'd like to know that in the Lloyd Shaw Dance Archives, where I'm volunteering, there are many, many workshop brochures from this camp. How do you pronounce it again?
Ida Hoppe.
Ida Hoppe, right. And these came from Don Armstrong. When he wanted to preserve his collection we got many, many copies of workshop notes at the various camps that you were running at the time.
I hired Don and Marie.
Yeah.
Marie was very good on children's rhythms.
Right, yeah.
And, of course, Don was good on contra.
Right. And still is, right. Mm. Yeah. And even though they're separated, they still work together.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, I see Don once in a while. And I had a letter from Marie trying to get me to come to her camp, which is in Kentucky, in August.
Oh, really?
Yes, right. But Don will be there. And so they're still friendly and still working together.
Well, that's interesting. I'm glad to hear it.
Right. So
we had people, as Shaw did.
Yes.
I was at the Pappy Summer School for 3 summers.
Oh, were you?
1942, 43, and 45.
Is that so?
If I remember it.
Okay.
And a lot of callers and dancers,
sure,
from all over the country.
Yeah.
I learned more from them than I did from Pappy.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Well, Pappy was an interesting person, a great philosopher. I never knew of anyone with a philosophy that said one thing and did just the opposite. Pappy used to say, "Don't teach square dancing to young children, like elementary kids." But he did it all the time.
Right.
He said, "Don't mix square dancing with folk dancing," but he always included folk dances in his program.
Right. Well, I hadn't thought of that. That's interesting. So you maintained your association with the square dance activity for many, many years, and
Yes, it just grew and grew and grew. After I started calling from the singing calls in the little book Good Morning,
right,
by Henry Ford, or published by Henry Ford, but actually written by Benjamin Lovett.
Right.
There were singing calls, and very simple.
Right.
And that's what I cut my teeth on.
Okay. Do you remember any of the names, by the way, of out of Good Morning? No.
Oh.
Well, we all have copies of Good Morning, so I
that was published in 1924, if I remember correctly.
Is that right? I didn't.
It maybe not that early.
I don't have that figure in mind, but Ralph, I'm going to stop the tape for a moment so I can turn it over.
Okay.
Stop for just a moment to turn the tape over. We have some more questions that we want to ask our good friend Ralph Piper. Ralph, at the presentation last night of the banquet of Caller Lab, you made a tremendous impression on the audience.
Well, thank you. I was scared to death.
Ah.
I was afraid I couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. No, you did great. There were a couple of stories there that kind of shocked the audience, but I think it's the first time at Caller Lab that I ever heard people laugh almost without stopping for a good 3 or 4 minutes at all. You really took them over.
Yeah, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, right.
Going back to the beginning, I called at the my in my dance classes at the university, and that same fall, 1938, I called at a series of square dance sessions at the International Institute in St. Paul, where they had quite a few dancers, and they took up a collection of 10 cents from each dancer, which they used to pay the accompanist. I didn't get paid. In fact, I called for 2 years without charging anything for my services.
Right.
Then I quit using live music and went to records, and I charged $5 and $10 and $15 and occasionally $25 at some big dance at a country club or
right.
athletic club, and I got probably $200 or $250 for a seminar, weekend seminar at some distance place. And I called for some groups and met regularly, like the first Monday of every month, or
yeah.
Or twice a month, or and also for just one night stands.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I got so many calls. I couldn't take them all, so I sometimes send out some of my dancers or students, lending them a record player and some records, and said,
right.
go ahead and take the job.
There you go.
So I started a lot of callers that way.
Good.
Including such as Arden Johnson, who became one of the presidents of the State Federation.
Okay. Going back to Massachusetts, I just happened to have a thought. Did you ever happen to know an old fiddler by the name of Sammy Spring? Spring? Okay. Well, one of the stories you were just relating, my father ran into him when he retired to Florida. And they used to talk, and said, "Well, do you ever go out and play anymore, Sammy?" And he said, "Well," he said, "I'll still go out." He says, "But I don't go out for less than $15."
Uh-huh.
And this was in the 50s, right?
Well, at first I didn't charge anyone for about 2 years. I thought that I should be paying them for letting me practice on them.
Yeah. Well. You've also done some writing in this square dance field. You offered some books. Tell us about them.
Oh, yes, I wrote. At least 100 articles in different magazines, many on dance,
right.
And I was associate editor of American Squares magazine,
right.
And Square and Round by Les Gotcher,
yeah, right.
And on the editorial board of the Roundup, which was our state magazine in Minnesota,
right.
Where actually in 1947 I was co-founder with Maury Gelman of what was the Folk Dance Federation of Minnesota.
Yeah.
It was my brainchild because I had been caught in San Francisco in 1946 to set up a physical medicine service at Letterman General Hospital and dance with folk dance and square dance groups in San Francisco, and they organized the State Folk Dance Federation of California that summer 1946. So when I get back to Minnesota, I had that bug in my ear, and at one of the Festival of Nations programs in St. Paul, I talked with Maureen Gelman and said, what do you think about trying to organize this state federation in Minnesota? So he thought it would be wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So we worked together and got it organized in the fall of 1947. And then as far as writing, I also wrote, co-authored with my wife, Zora, who was a dancer and teacher, the little booklet called 175 Folk and Round Dances.
Okay.
And also the book called Developing the Creative Square Dance Caller.
Okay. There you go. Well, I can't help but think that when you were sharing your expertise with Les Gotcher, that you and he must have been what we would call an odd couple.
I guess so.
Les was a character. So, Les has passed away, you know.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Most of my colleagues have. I'm surprised I outlived them. I didn't expect to live beyond 55. Because I had a brother who died at 31.
Is that right?
And my mother died at 46.
Huh.
I mean my father. My mother died at 54. So I thought if I lived to be 55, I would be lucky.
You'd be ahead of the game, right?
Ah.
Yeah. Well, Les had moved to Hawaii.
Really?
And his wife had passed away. And he remarried in Hawaii. Her name was Sunshine. She was a terrific dancer.
Mm-hmm.
But he was still teaching line dancing, mostly. The country western style of line dancing up until the time he died. That was not too long ago either. So, well, Ralph, I think we're just about through, unless you could think of anything else you'd like to have us save for posterity.
Oh, I don't know. I get to call in 36 states or 38. Four Canadian provinces and nine countries out of the 83 countries that I visited or lived in.
Right.
And I called and taught some after I retired in 1970 at Laguna Leisure World in Laguna Hills, and I danced some with some people who were members of your caller lab, like Bill Johnson, mm-hmm. who's up in Oregon now, Hal Rice, mm-hmm. and Art Harvey. I have my teaching after 1970 was on a volunteer basis.
Right, right. I just had an interview with a couple in Leisure World. They were they're honored by the Round Dance Association, like Caller Lab, which they call Round Lab, and they have what is the Silver Halo Award, which is similar to the award that you received last mm-hmm. night, and that's Eddie and Audrey Palmquist, and they live in Leisure World. I was there.
Yeah. Which one?
I went in gate 9.
Oh, in Laguna Hill?
Yes, right.
What's the name?
Palmquist.
Yeah. I have to look them up.
Okay. Yeah, I've got their address, and I'll send it to you.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I have your
address. I live just outside the gates now.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Outside of gate 3.
All right.
At Palm Terrace.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Well, we really, really enjoyed your acceptance speech last night, and I really, really enjoyed having this chance to sit and chat with you for a few minutes about your...
That award will look nice besides my 4 sports halls of fame awards.
There you go. Well, that was a pleasure.
It's very meaningful to me.
Right. Well, I'm glad of that. So, Dr. Ralph Piper, we thank you for taking the time, and we'll hope that you enjoy life down in Laguna Hills. I'm sure you will. It's a beautiful area.
I've lived a couple lifetimes already.
Not quite. But thank you so very, very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Bob.
Right. End of tape.